The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 39. The Ritual of Osiris. Section 2. The Official Rites. Such, then, were the principal events of the farmer's calendar in ancient Egypt, and such the simple religious rites by which he celebrated them. But we have still to consider the Osirian festivals of the official calendar, so far as these are described by Greek writers or recorded on the monuments. In examining them, it is necessary to bear in mind that on account of the movable year of the old Egyptian calendar, the true astronomical dates of the official festivals must have varied from year to year, at least until the adoption of the fixed Alexandrian year in 30 BC. From that time onward, apparently, the dates of the festivals were determined by the new calendar, and so ceased to rotate throughout the length of the solar year. At all events, Plutarch, writing about the end of the first century, implies that they were then fixed, not movable. For though he does not mention the Alexandrian calendar, he clearly dates the festivals by it. Moreover, the long festal calendar of Aeson, an important document of the imperial age, is obviously based on the fixed Alexandrian year. For it assigns the mark for New Year's Day to the day which corresponds to the 29th of August, which was the first day of the Alexandrian year, and its references to the rising of the Nile, the position of the sun, and the operations of agriculture are all in harmony with this supposition. Thus we may take it as fairly certain that from 30 BC onwards the Egyptian festivals were stationary in the solar year. Herodotus tells us that the grave of Osiris was at Saim, Lower Egypt, and that there was a lake there upon which the sufferings of the god were displayed as a mystery by night. This commemoration of the divine passion was held once a year. The people mourned and beat their breasts at it to testify their sorrow for the death of the god. And an image of a cow, made of gilt wood with a golden sun between its horns, was carried out of the chamber in which it stood the rest of the year. The cow no doubt represented Isis herself, for cows were sacred to her, and she was regularly depicted with the horns of a cow on her head, or even as a woman with the head of a cow. It is probable that the carrying out of her cow-shaped image symbolized the goddess searching for the dead body of Osiris. For this was the native Egyptian interpretation of a similar ceremony observed in Plutarch's time about the winter solstice, when the gilt cow was carried 7 times round the temple. A great feature of the festival was the nocturnal illumination. People fastened drawers of oil lamps to the outside of their houses, and the lamps burned all night long. The custom was not confined to Say, but was observed throughout the whole of Egypt. This universal illumination of the houses on one night of the year suggests that the festival may have been a commemoration not merely of the dead Osiris but of the dead in general, in other words, that it may have been a night of all souls. For it is a widespread belief that the souls of the dead revisit their old homes on one night of the year. And on that solemn occasion people prepare for the reception of the ghosts by laying out food for them to eat, and lighting lamps to guide them on their dark road from into the grave. Herodotus, who briefly describes the festival, omits to mention its date, but we can determine it with some probability from other sources. Thus Plutarch tells us that Osiris was murdered on the 17th of the month Athir, and that the Egyptians accordingly observed mournful rites for 4 days from the 17th of Athir. Now in the Alexandrian calendar, which Plutarch used, these 4 days corresponded to the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th of November, and this date answers exactly to the other indications given by Plutarch, who says that at the time of the festival the Nile was sinking, the north wind dying away, the nights lengthening, and the leaves falling from the trees. During these 4 days a gilt cow swathed in a black pall was exhibited as an image of Isis. This, no doubt, was the image mentioned by Herodotus in his account of the festival. On the 19th day of the month the people went down to the sea, the priests carrying a shrine which contained a golden casket. Into this casket they poured fresh water, and thereupon the spectators raised a shout that Osiris was found. After that they took some vegetable mold, moistened it with water, mixed it with precious spices and incense, and molded the paste into a small moon-shaped image, which was then robed and ornamented. Thus it appears that the purpose of the ceremonies described by Plutarch was to represent dramatically, first, the search for the dead body of Osiris, and, second, its joyful discovery, followed by the resurrection of the dead god who came to life again in the new image of vegetable mold and spices. Lactantius tells us how on these occasions the priests, with their shaven bodies, beat their breasts and lamented, imitating the sorrowful search of Isis for her lost son Osiris, and how afterwards their sorrow was turned to joy when the jackal-headed god Anubis, or rather a mummy in his stead, produced a small boy, the living representative of the god who was lost and was found. Thus Lactantius regarded Osiris as the son instead of the husband of Isis, and he makes no mention of the image of vegetable mold. It is probable that the boy who figured in the sacred drama played the part, not of Osiris, but of his son Horus. But as the death and resurrection of the god were celebrated in many cities of Egypt, it is also possible that in some places the part of the god come to life was played by a living actor instead of by an image. Another Christian writer describes how the Egyptians, with shorn heads, annually lamented over a buried idol of Osiris, smiting their breasts, slashing their shoulders, ripping open their old wounds, until, after several days of mourning, they professed to find the mangled remains of the god, at which they rejoiced. However, the details of the ceremony may have varied in different places, the pretense of finding the god's body, and probably of restoring it to life, was a great event in the festal year of the Egyptians. The shouts of joy which greeted it are described or alluded to by many ancient writers. The funeral rites of Osiris, as they were observed at his great festival in the Sixtine provinces of Egypt, are described in a long inscription of the Ptolemaic period, which is engraved on the walls of the god's temple at Dendera, the Tentera of the Greeks, a town of Upper Egypt situated on the western bank of the Nile about 40 miles north of Thebes. Unfortunately, while the information thus furnished is remarkably full and minute on many points, the arrangement adopted in the inscription is so confused and the expression often so obscure that a clear and consistent account of the ceremonies as a whole can hardly be extracted from it. Moreover, we learn from the document that the ceremonies varied somewhat in the several sitters, the ritual of Abydos, for example, differing from that of Busiris. Without attempting to trace all the particularities of local usage, I shall briefly indicate what seem to have been the leading features of the festival, so far as these can be ascertained with tolerable certainty. The rites lasted 18 days, from the 12th to the 30th of the month Hoyuk, and set forth the nature of Osiris in his triple aspect as dead, dismembered, and finally reconstituted by the union of his scattered limbs. In the first of these aspects he was called Gentamind, Gentiamenti, in the second Osirisep, and in the third Sokari, Seker. Small images of a god were molded of sand or vegetable earth and corn, to which incense was sometimes added. His face was painted yellow and his cheekbones green. These images were cast in a mold of pure gold, which represented the god in the form of a mummy, with the white crown of Egypt on his head. The festival opened on the 12th day of Khoyuk with a ceremony of ploughing and sowing. Two black cows were yoked to the plough, which was made of tamarisk wood, while the share was of black copper. A boy scattered the seed. One end of the field was sown with barley, the other with spelt, and the middle with flax. During the operation the chief celebrant recited the ritual chapter of the sowing of the fields. At Busiris on the 20th of Khoyuk sand and barley were put in the god's garden, which appears to have been a sort of large flower pot. This was done in the presence of the cow goddess Shenti, represented seemingly by the image of a cow made of gilt sycamore wood with a headless human image in its inside. Then fresh inundation water was poured out of a golden vase over both the goddess and the garden, single quote in the Bible was allowed to grow as the emblem of the resurrection of the God after his burial in the earth, for the growth of the garden is the growth of the divine substance. On the 22nd of Tiak, at the 8th hour, the images of Osiris, attended by 34 images of deities, performed a mysterious voyage in 34 tiny boats made of papyrus, which were illuminated by 365 lights. On the 24th of Tiak, after sunset, the effigy of Osiris in a coffin of mulberry wood was laid in the grave, and at the 9th hour of the night the effigy which had been made and deposited the year before was removed and placed upon boughs of sycamore. Lastly, on the 30th day of Tiak they repaired to the Holy Sepulchre, a subterranean chamber over which appears to have grown a clump of Persi trees. Entering the vault by the western door, they laid the coffined effigy of the dead god reverently on a bed of sand in the chamber. So they left him to his rest, and departed from the sepulchre by the eastern door. Thus ended the ceremonies in the month of Tiak. In the foregoing account of the festival, drawn from the great inscription of Dendera, the burial of Osiris figures prominently, while his resurrection is implied rather than expressed. This defect of the document, however, is amply compensated by a remarkable series of bas-reliefs which accompany and illustrate the inscription. These exhibit in a series of scenes the dead god lying swathed as a mummy on his bier, then gradually raising himself up higher and higher, until at last he has entirely quitted the bier and is seen erect between the guardian wings of the faithful Isis, who stands behind him, while a male figure holds up before his eyes the crux ansata, the Egyptian symbol of life. The resurrection of the god could hardly be portrayed more graphically. Even more instructive, however, is another representation of the same event in a chamber dedicated to Osiris in the great temple of Isis at Philae. Here we see the dead body of Osiris with stalks of corn springing from it, while a priest waters the stalks from a pitcher which he holds in his hand. The accompanying inscription sets forth that, this is the form of him whom one may not name, Osiris of the Mysteries, who springs from the returning waters. Taken together, the picture and the word seem to leave no doubt that Osiris was here conceived and represented as a personification of the corn which springs from the fields after they have been fertilized by the inundation. This, according to the inscription, was the kernel of the mysteries, the innermost secret revealed to the initiated. So in the rites of Demeter at Eleusis a reaped ear of corn was exhibited to the worshippers as the central mystery of their religion. We can now fully understand why at the great festival of sowing in the month of Tiak the priests used to bury effigies of Osiris made of earth and corn. When these effigies were taken up again at the end of a year or of a shorter interval, the corn would be found to have sprouted from the body of Osiris, and this sprouting of the grain would be hailed as an omen, or rather as the cause, of the growth of the crops. The corn god produced the corn from himself. He gave his own body to feed the people, he died that they might live. And from the death and resurrection of their great god the Egyptians drew not only their support and sustenance in this life, but also their hope of a life eternal beyond the grave. This hope is indicated in the clearest manner by the very remarkable effigies of Osiris which have come to light in Egyptian cemeteries. Thus in the valley of the kings at Thebes there was found the tomb of Rodolf and Bera who lived about 1500 BC. Among the rich contents of the tomb there was a bier on which rested a mattress of reeds covered with three layers of linen. On the upper side of the linen was painted a life-size figure of Osiris. And the interior of the figure, which was waterproof, contained a mixture of vegetable mold, barley, and a sticky fluid. The barley had sprouted and sent out shoots 2 or 3 inches long. Again, in the cemetery at Sinopolis, were numerous burials of Osiris figures. These were made of grain wrapped up in cloth and roughly shaped like an Osiris, and placed inside a bricked-up recess at the side of the tomb, sometimes in small pottery coffins, sometimes in wooden coffins in the form of a hank mummy, sometimes without any coffins at all. These corn-stuffed figures were bandaged like mummies with patches of gilding here and there, as if in imitation of the golden mold in which the similar figures of Osiris were cast at the festival of sowing. Again, effigies of Osiris, with faces of green wax and their interior full of grain, were found buried near the necropolis of Thebes. Finally, we are told by Professor Ehrman that between the legs of mummies, there sometimes lies a figure of Osiris made of slime. It is filled with grains of corn, the spouting of which is intended to signify the resurrection of the god. We cannot doubt that, just as the burial of corn-stuffed images of Osiris in the earth at the festival of sowing was designed to quicken the seed, so the burial of similar images in the grave was meant to quicken the dead, in other words, to ensure their spiritual immortality.